You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to a new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records, a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, celebrity chef Chris Santos. I hate calling myself that. And underground metal connoisseur Matt Bacon, who loves being called that. This is your new favorite podcast for all things heavy metal, as well as breakdowns of your favorite combat sports and riffing on some food talk every week with very special guests from across the globe. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Delirious Nomads, where we interview very, very special guests about all things metal, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records and Metal Blade Records, and hosted by myself and Mr. Bacon Bits, Matt Bacon. Today we have a very, very special guest with a 40-year history of loving metal. He may be one of the greatest guests we've ever had because today's guest is me. Matt is going to be throwing me some blind questions about all things metal today, and I don't know if it's an interview or if he's going to try and rapid fire me some things or what, but today we're going to talk about why I love metal and how it started and how we got to this podcast. So take it away, Mr. Bacon.
Let's do it. This is going to be a great one to confuse all the Chopped fans.
Yes.
Or in the words of my grandmother, that Chris Santos guy seems so nice on TV. How can he listen to that horrible music?
Oh, boy. He thinks I'm handsome, too, right?
She does. Yeah, she's always telling me to dress more like you.
Well, I got a boxing t-shirt on today, so I don't know that really fits you. But
Anyway, so let's just kick this off, Chris. What was the first metal record you had that, like, blew your mind and made you go, like, yeah, okay, this is it?
Okay, that's a three-part answer, even four-part in a way. The first music that kind of blew me away was both Cheap Trick's Live at Budokan and Kiss Alive 2 or Kiss Alive. I'm not sure.
Kiss Alive 2 is a superior Kiss Alive, just saying.
Yeah, I think it's probably Kiss Alive 2. So I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and my older brother Jay, who does A&R for Blacklight Media Records, he had Live at Budokan from Cheap Trick, and he had Kiss Alive 2, and I got hooked on that like at a really, really, really young age. And then when I was about 11 or 12, there was this girl that I had a crush on all through high school. And she introduced me to Merciful Fate. And I would go to her house after school and we would listen to Melissa and Don't Break the Oath. But she even hand wrote all the lyrics to all the songs. And I actually recently just found them in my closet. I'm still unpacking from moving to LA a year and a half ago. But my closet, which is right to my right, I found the handwritten lyrics to Don't Break the Oath and Melissa. And I want to try to find a way to frame them or something. And then that was the record that definitely was like the gateway drug into metal. But as far as the first record that really grabbed me, it's actually probably going to surprise you and anyone that knows me. But that very first Metal Church record, I remember in Providence where I grew up, or I grew up outside of Providence, but in Providence, the rock station WHJY, they used to do a metal show on Saturday nights. And I remember them playing a Metal Church song. And at that time, what I would do is I would actually record on a cassette each episode of the metal show and listen to it throughout the week. But nothing grabbed me like this Metal Church record. And I still think it's one of the most underrated metal records of all time.
It's interesting. I feel like Metal Church are weirdly underrated. Like, I don't know if you remember, like, the first, like, really good history of metal is Ian Christie's Metal of Headbangers Guide or something.
Yeah.
And he's like really into metal church too. And I feel like they're one of those bands that like, and I'm not trying to like old guy you here, but like they're one of those bands that like guys of your generation, like was definitely a lot more influential than they ended up getting credit for like down the line.
Yeah. I mean, the first three records, two with their original singer, David Wayne, and then they brought in Mike Howe from Heretic for the third record, who had a totally different voice. All those three records still hold up. I still listen to them today.
Yeah.
The problem with Metal Church was twofold. One is after those three records, they never really put out a good record again. They put out a record with a good song here and there, but they never put out a real fully focused effort, in my opinion. And then the other thing is Kurt Vanderhoof, the founder and lead guitar player and main writer, he didn't like to tour. So they'd write records, but they would go on tour without him. It was just all a little bit weird. But I saw them open for Metallica on the Master of Puppets tour. It was like the second show with Jason Newsted after the Cliff Burton tragedy.
Wow.
And it was still the full band with the original singer, David Wayne. And they were great, man. They held right up to Metallica, in my opinion. That was 1986, so my memory might... Maybe I'm just being a little romantic about it, but love Metal Church.
Yeah, that must have been crazy to see them, like... Because I feel like that period of thrash metal was like still like legitimately dangerous and scary.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, that must have been awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so then next up, what I wanted to kind of get into kind of on the flip side is, what's your favorite like recent metal record? And you're not allowed to say a Blacklight record.
Oh.
And recent, I mean in the last like 3 to 5 years.
So I'm like grabbing my iPhone to see, because I listen, there's so much music.
Yeah.
I mean, the Numenorion record, which I think we've talked about before.
Yeah.
Is maybe my favorite one of my favorite records of all time. It's snuck into my all time, probably top 10, the record wow. Adore in 2019. It's probably my favorite record. One of my top 10 favorite records. It's like black metal, but very atmospheric. Just an incredible record from start to finish. That would be one that I would say was recent. I would say Rivers of Nile, Where Owls Know My Name. Now they have a more recent record out on Metal Blade called The Work, which is an incredible record. Really incredible songwriting. But for me, Where Owls Know My Name is just like another top 10, top 15 record of all time. So I would go with those two probably.
Now you're talking about your top 10. What's your favorite metal record ever? And is that different from your favorite record ever?
Well, snap. Yeah, probably my favorite record ever is probably, I mean, they're metal too, but my favorite record ever is probably White Pony by Deftones.
Okay.
But my favorite record of all time, I mean, how can you go against Rain and Blood? I don't know.
Me too. Like, that's it.
I don't know how to vote against Rain and Blood. I mean, I could throw a Gojira record in there. I could throw a Metallica record in there.
But like, nah.
Rain and Blood's got to be my all-time favorite metal record, and White Pony would be my favorite record, even though that's still kind of metal.
Yeah, but it's not, yeah.
There's just enough stuff in White Pony that's not metal that I can't call it a full metal.
Sure, I would agree. I have this, because I was looking at Rain and Blood on my list of records I wanted to ask you about, and I was thinking about, I have this really silly memory of being one of the first times Trevor from Black Dahlia and I hung out, like during COVID, we were neighbors and like spent a lot of time together. And one of the first times I was at his house, I remember we just listened to Rain and Blood together.
Oh,
we were like little kids, just like air drumming. And I remember his girlfriend looking at us and being like, the fuck is wrong with you people? like, this is who I hang out with.
You know, I just had a thought. I don't know that White Pony is my favorite record, although it was the one that came to mind. But The Real Thing by Faith No More is just tremendous. The Real Thing by Faith No More is the only record I can ever remember. The way I came across it was, I was at a rock club in Providence, Rhode Island called The Living Room for some metal show. I can't even remember what the show was, but the room was packed Soundgarden was playing, but it was in between bands, and the house DJ or the house mixer guy put on The Real Thing. And by like the second song, I was like, and you know, it was really loud and everybody was talking, and I was like, shh. I was like, what is this? What is this? And by like the fourth song, I went and found the guy and I was like, what is this? And he told me what it was. That happened to me there. There's a band called Transport League from Sweden that has some killer records, just another super underrated band. And they have pretty large catalog. I would say they have probably like 6 full lengths. One of my all-time favorite bands. I heard them in a record store in Paris, and again had that same kind of moment where I just stopped in my tracks and went up to the guy at the and was like, "Who is this?" And told me it was Transport League. They put out several amazing records that I listen to this day. Do you know them, Matt? Transport League?
I do not. I made note already to listen to them.
Yeah, you got to check them out. I'm going to tell you in one second. The guy's voice, Tony Jelenovich, is great. They only played one show in the United States ever, and it was at this tiny little banquet hall in New Jersey, and I was there.
That's awesome.
Satanic Panic and Super Evil are their two best records. Super Evil came out in like 2001. Satanic Panic came out in 2004. But they put out records as recently as 2019. But Super Evil and Satanic Panic are, again, definitely top 10, 15 records of my life. And nobody knows who they are.
That's awesome. So I put together kind of a list of records I know you like, you know, so I wanted to kind of run through a bunch of them and just talk about records. Okay. So let's start with a record I think has a really deep personal connection for you, which is Huntress's Spell Eater.
Oh, geez. Yeah. So, oh gosh. What a great record. So Huntress was a great band led by Jill Janis, who had a 4-octave range, but she was just an incredible stage presence. She worked so hard on stage. Blake, the lead guitar player, was amazing on stage. Eli Santana, who's now the lead singer of Insight, was also in that band. They put out 3 records, but Spell Eater was the first. A lot of witchcraft and sorcery kind of in the lyrics, but Jill actually walked the talk. She was a practicing Wiccan and just an incredible performer in general. She also had a little all-star side band with Nita Strauss from the Alice Cooper band and Samantha Maloney, who played for Motley Crue for a minute. But unfortunately, Jill did take her life, I guess about 4 years ago now, or be 4 years in August. And that was a shock to a lot of people, to everybody. Her memorial was one of the most moving things I've ever been to in my life. It was a Wiccan memorial that was held upstairs at the Rainbow. But the record itself, Spell Eater, is just great. It's just, it's kind of, I don't even know how to describe it. It's kind of thrashy. It's got a little bit, little touches of, like just sprinkles of black metal and old school galloping, like I would say like Iron Maiden-esque riffs throughout the whole record. And her voice just leading the way. That's just the biggest voice. I mean, there are a lot of great female vocalists in metal now more than ever. But for me, Jill will always be the best.
No, yeah, she definitely had a range. I actually re-listened to that record relatively recently, and I was like, wow, like there's range and there's fucking range. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's funny. As I'm talking to you, I'm like writing down like Transport League, Huntress, like bands. I gotta like get back into the rotation.
Yeah, 100%.
So much music that you sometimes forget how long it's been since you revisited an old favorite.
Yeah, which is kind of the best part, right? Is like rediscovering things you loved.
Yeah, for sure.
So continuing on sort of the new stuff, Harm's Way, Rust.
Yeah. So I really, you know, you go through. I think you'll learn this because you're still very young, but as you get older as a metalhead, you go through phases, I think, where you like kind of, I'm a genre skipper. I'm definitely not a one genre type of guy. I never quite understood or understand those kind of fans anyway. I think if you like metal, you should love all things metal. I love glam and hair metal. I love all the metals. But I went through a phase for a couple of years where everything I was listening to was like post-hardcore, right? Like Orange 9mm and Quicksand and Helmet and, you know, all those bands. And then I went through Junius, who I guess you could kind of pop in there, who's another great, great band from New England. But, you know, and then as I've gotten older, I've actually gotten into even more and more aggressive music. Like I've gotten into more black metal these days than ever. But a couple of years ago, I really deeply got into a phase, which I think I'm still in, which is I would call that, you know, you'd call it hardcore, but it's too metal to be hardcore. But we're talking about bands like Code Orange, Knock Loose, Harm's Way, Blacklight Media's Capra, Alpha Wolf from Australia, Great American Ghost, Employed to Serve. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. But I was kind of started that journey with Harm's Way and that Rust record. I just came across it. Matter of fact, they got signed to Metal Blade because I had heard some earlier stuff of theirs and I played it for Brian, and Brian contacted them, and lo and behold, they were free. And it's one of the reasons why Blacklight Media came to be, is because I was bringing Brian bands. And after he signed a handful of them, he was like, this is ridiculous. Let's do an imprint. Anyway, I digress. Rust is just a killer record. It happened to coincide with, you know, I've been on a pretty good health journey for the last few years, where I've, whereas for a while there, I was not paying attention to my health. I was drinking far too much, eating far too poorly, and weighing far too much. And I kind of discovered that Rust record when I started to work out again. And it is the perfect gym. And not that I'm like this gym, like go to the gym and lift weights guy. I like to box for my workout, but that Harm's Way record was like the catalyst for me working out. It got me, I would wake up and want to go to the gym just so I could blast that record and listen to it. And it still is. It's still one of my big, one of my big workout jams. It's just heavy.
Yeah, for sure. Another band that I think that I wanted to get into with you was Avatar. And I believe the record that you got into with them was Hail the Apocalypse. Is that correct?
No, Black Waltz. Black Waltz.
Black Waltz. Okay.
Which was, I think, the one right before Hail the Apocalypse. I don't remember how I found them, but when I did find them, they had already produced so many great videos for the Black Waltz record. And I remember that after work, I would go to my, I had an office across the street from the, one of my restaurants. And after work, I would invite different friends over on any given weekend night. And we'd get a 12 pack of beer and a bottle of whiskey, go to my office. And I'd be like, you got to check this band out. And I'd run them through all the Black Waltz videos and all their previous videos. And I would do that with my best friend, Dave. And then the next week I would do it with my chef and metalhead, Derek. And the next week I would do it with someone else. It was like literally every weekend I was bringing guys to my office to drink and just watch Avatar videos.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so they've become one of my favorite bands. They've definitely, you know, they are super, what's the word? Productive. They put out a lot of records in a short period of time. Each record has its own identity. I've gotten to know them really well. I got to spend a few days in the studio with them when they were recording their last record. I cook vegan meals for them whenever they're in town. They're the nicest guys, all vegans, the entire band, crew, everything. And one of the best live acts you'll ever see. They just put on such a great show. They're so committed to the characters, so to speak, that they play.
Yeah.
They're awesome. Super awesome. If anyone wants to get hooked on Avatar, like go to a show, don't even get a record, just go to a show. And I guarantee you, you'll be a fan for life.
That's what I've heard about that band. They've definitely like polished it in a really cool way.
Yeah. I brought a friend of mine to see them just recently here in LA at the Wiltern, Josh, who is the drummer for the Nita Strauss band. And he'd heard of them, of course, but he just never heard them or seen them. And so I said, hey, I'm going to see them at the Wiltern. I got a plus one. You want to come? And at the end of the show, he was just like, oh my God, thank you so much. I cannot believe I've been sleeping on this band for so long. Like, they're so amazing. So yeah, they're just a great band.
Absolutely. Then to kind of go back into some earlier things I know you like, can we talk about Candiria's Beyond Reasonable Doubt? Is that the right Candiria record to ask you about?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, I love that record. That record's, you know, when they were kind of doing what they really are most known for, which was that sort of mashup of jazz and metal. The songs I want to hear most when I see Candiria live, but it's probably not my favorite record when I want to hear Candiria. When I want to hear Candiria, I want to hear What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Stronger, which is kind of their quote unquote, it was their commercial record where they did an MTV video and they lost a little bit of their original following. But for me, it was much more personal because of my relationship with the guys and with Mike MacGyver and John Lamacchia specifically, because they had an awful car wreck or van wreck where they were all hospitalized, some near death for a while. And they wrote this record out of the wreckage of that. And literally the cover of the record is their total van. You know, Johnny was in the hospital for 3 weeks and their drummer was never able to tour again. And the songs on that record, even though they're a little bit more straightforward and, like I said, over commercial for them and then lost them maybe some fans, the songs and the lyrical content and knowing what they came back from is kind of makes it my favorite record for Candiria.
Absolutely. Continuing on sort of more modern stuff, Amon Amarth, Twilight of the Thunder God, talk to me.
Monomarth is, I'd rather than talk records, I mean, I love their records. I'm really looking forward to the new one. And Brian Slagle has actually reached out to me on the side and said, wait until you hear the new Monomarth, you're going to lose your mind. But the cool thing about Monomarth was I was on the Mayhem Festival in 2013, which I cannot believe is 9 years ago now. But that's when I met Huntress and Jill, and we became such good friends. And one of the things that we would do every day is we did so many things. We would go on the main stage right before the bands would start and host the local guitar shredding contest. And then we would bring up the Medal of Honor, which was, we recognized someone in the military. And then we would bring Monomarth on stage to open up the main stage. And so at the very beginning of that, I didn't know those guys at all. But by the end of my 3 week stint, me and Johan were like best buds, and we could communicate all the time. I love seeing that guy. He is a true real life Viking, but also just such a nice guy. He has this great yoga practice and meditation practice with his wife. But then you get him up on stage and he's, you know, drinking beer out of his little Viking horn, and he's got that voice that, you know, it feels like he doesn't even need a microphone to project that voice.
Right. They're a band where, like, I like Monomarth, but I don't like love Monomarth. But when I see them live every time, I'm like, this is it. Like, do you know what I'm saying?
They really seem to be getting better and better, which is incredible, because I think this is their 10th or 11th studio record. They did a documentary too, and they actually included me, which was pretty cool. But yeah.
That's really cool. So then I want to kind of switch into the classic stuff. We talked about Kiss. I wanted to talk about, first and foremost, I want to make sure we have a snippet on the record Delirious Nomads from Armored Saint. That is the impetus for this show.
Yeah. I have the original cassette right here.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, gosh. I'm looking at it right now. I was a huge Armored Saint fan right from the beginning. I love Joey Vera's voice. I'm sorry, he's the bass player. That's not right.
I love that we had that mistake on the show before.
I know. I don't know. I love John Bush's voice. Yeah. Like low kind of guttural tone, but it still has a lot of melody in it. And Delirious Nomads is just one of those records, one of those cassettes that as a teenager was always very, very close to, within reach. There's certain records that I remember, or again, cassettes. This is before records. This is before CDs. There were certain cassettes that I would arrange them in my room, like which ones I'm going to listen to probably more than others. And so Armored Saint's Delirious Nomad, Fate's Warning, Awaken the Guardian, Anthrax, Spreading the Disease, Dark Angel, Darkness Descends, you know, Metallica, you know, Ride the Lightning. Those were my go-tos. Obviously Slayer, Rain and Blood. Those were my go-tos. So they had their own separate stack. And then all the other cassettes had their other stack.
That's awesome. Tell me more, because like you've kind of casually referenced this on the podcast before and in like conversation with me. Tell me more about your high school bedroom, because it sounds like it was like an 80s metal haven.
Yeah, I have a couple of photos laying around somewhere. So it had this really horrible, like, I don't understand. I should ask my mother. It was this really horrible, like fluorescent yellow and lime green pattern wallpaper, which was so horrid that I just covered up every square inch of it that I could with, like, you know, cutouts from Hit Parader and Kerrang and God, what were the other magazines of the day? Cream and gosh, Metal, whatever. So there was like a transfer, because it started with mostly with like Rat and Motley Crue and that kind of stuff. And then it kind of started, I started taking that stuff down and putting like Queensryche and Armored Saint. And then as that stuff started to come down and move over. And that's when I started putting Slayer and Metallica and Dark Angel and Possessed. And so I think it depends on what grade I was in. If I was in like eighth or ninth grade, it was glam metal. 10th grade and on, it was, you know, Merciful Fate and Slayer and Dark Angel. I saw Dark Angel and Possessed when I was like 14 years old.
And that's insane.
The two things that stand out were that the singer of Dark Angel blew his voice out and he threw his microphone stand and stormed off the stage. And Gene Hoglund sang the rest of the set while playing drums. And then when the show was over, there was a massive brawl with a bunch of bikers. And I was just like, kind of up against the wall, just trying to stay out of the way. I was a 14-year-old kid, but just also kind of like you know, the memes with like eating the popcorn. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't scared. I wasn't scared. I was like totally. It was such an adrenaline rush.
Like, this is what heavy metal is.
Yeah, and so that was another coming of age, like, I'm hooked on metal moment.
That's awesome. Let's just run through some classic thrash then, since we're kind of on that note. What's your favorite Exodus record?
I mean, either the new one or Bonded by Blood. Bonded by Blood is a classic record. Obviously, another just all time great thrash record of all time. But I'm really into the new record.
It's got riffs.
Like, a lot.
I agree.
It's got riffs on riffs on riffs and great songs. And the band's never sounded better. The singers never sounded better. It's just great. It's just really great.
Yeah, no, it's definitely one of those records that really speaks to, like, Gary Holt is just like a one of a kind goddamn force. And here's an hour of Gary Holt riffs. Fuck you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But with that gravelly vocal over it, you know what I mean? Which is so dirty.
Yeah, that snarl. So good. Okay, what about Sepultura? Were you a Roots guy?
Yes, absolutely. They're actually playing here. The new lineup, or the newest lineup, is playing. Well, it's not a new lineup anymore. I don't know why I'm saying that. The Derek Green led Sepultura.
Pretty sure he's been in the band longer than Max at this point.
Probably, yeah. They're playing it soon with Sacred Reich, and I'm hoping to go. But definitely, you know, love the old stuff. Love the Roots. Me and Jeff Blanchard from Lucky 13 and John Lamacchia from Candiria just ate at a restaurant called Brooklyn Roots. And because we're in our late 40s or 50s, but we're still like teenage knucklehead metalheads, we're driving to the restaurant going, Roots, Brooklyn Roots, all the way to the Italian restaurant.
That's like, awesome.
It's stupid is what it is, but it's fun.
That's fucking rad. More thrash. Let's keep it up. So you mentioned Sacred Reich. What's your favorite Sacred Reich record?
Surf Nicaragua, probably.
Okay.
Although The American Way was pretty good too. I mean, they're both great. They're a great live band. I saw them with Flotsam and Jetsam probably in like 1986. And speaking of Flotsam and Jetsam, they just released a new record, which is like their 15th or 14th.
Yeah, they never stopped.
And it's good. It's really good. Blood in the Water, I think it's called. I just got it.
I love when you see like those classic metal bands who like didn't stop in the 90s and just have a huge discography.
Yeah. Blood in the Water.
There's like three or four records you never heard, but they're all sick anyway. And you're like, wow, okay. Like,
it's really, really good. Eric AK can still sing. It's so funny because when they started, if you go to like YouTube and you go to Doomsday for the Deceiver, which is the 1986 record that they did with Jason Newsted, which led to Jason being discovered and joining Metallica. If you look at videos of them performing those songs, they're like, that's a thrash album, but their hair is all teased and they're all wearing makeup and they're all like doing like the synchronized guitar movements and stuff. And it's just really funny to see the mashup of like hair and glam with like a thrash metal band. And they made it work. They don't do that anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, but it's definitely like very, I really enjoy like digging into sort of like that very weird period of like 82 to 85,
mm-hmm.
where like there was just metal. There was no like, this is glam and this is thrash and never shall the two meet.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It was just sort of like,
we could probably fill one of these 35, 40 minute podcasts by doing nothing but naming the subgenres of metal.
Yeah.
Like I would name one and then you would name one and then I would name one and then you would name one before you know it. Yeah, out of time.
We used to play this game on tour where like I would say a band and then like you'd have to say a band that started with the last letter of the band I just said.
The last letter. So give me an example.
So like if I say Metallica, you have to say AC/DC, and then I have to say Kira Thungle, and then you have to say Led Zeppelin, and I have to say Nightwish, and then you have to say Hate.
And then I have to say Exodus. Or you have to say.
Yeah, then I would say Slayer.
Right, and I would say Rat. This is a fun game.
Yeah, and then it's a great game. And then there's like bonus points if you can like pull out something like really weird. Like if you say Rat, and I instead of saying like I don't know,
instead of just saying a name that begins with T, you could say TT Quick because Rat ends with two T's.
Exactly. And then if I came out with like,
ooh,
you know, Camelot or something, like whatever, it's a good game. We'll
TNT.
We'll play the game next time we're waiting for something, we're going to play that game and everyone's going to think we really have like some sort of mental issue. It's going to be awesome.
It's actually be fun to do with our guests for the last 5 minutes of the podcast.
Yeah, it was one of the very dumb tour games we used to play. The other was called Who Has Better Eyes? And we would look at signs off in the distance on the highway and see who could read them first.
I used to kidnap Phil Demmel, and I had my own tour bus, and I would kidnap Phil Demmel every night, and we would stay up pretty much the whole bus ride drinking, and we would play Name That Tune on an iPod for $20 a song. But literally, it was like just passing the $20 bill back and forth. Like, almost never did someone ever walk away with more than like $20 or $40. We did that.
That's awesome. That's so like, so actually speaking of Phil Demmel, this is what I wanted to ask you about. Last album, I know it's a favorite of yours, Machine Head, Burn My Eyes. Talk to me.
Yeah. I mean, early Machine Head, first couple records were just tremendous. And live, they still are. I think they're a polarizing band. I think Rob Flynn maybe rubs people the wrong way a little bit. And I know that he kind of branched out a little bit and did like a little new metal thing in the early 2000s or whatever. But I think that they, you know, their body of work, you know, in general is as strong as, you know, any band of that sort of genre. And Burn My Eyes is probably the best record that they ever put out. I mean, when they are on, the songs that are the best Machine Head songs, you could argue are some of the best metal songs ever written.
Yeah. No, I think that Rob Flynn is just an incredible like self-promoter.
Yeah.
And that's obviously going to like fuck with some people, but I don't know. Yeah.
He's a super cool dude, but I'm just saying like, from what I read, it seems like he can be a little polarizing, but I think the guy's a genius. He's got Logan back in the band now, which is cool. And Phil's doing his own thing. I mean, Phil's doing everything.
Yeah, no, he's become that guy.
Violence. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. So that's, you know, 40 minutes of the guy from Chopped talking metal.
I could do this again and again and again. So
no, this was fun. This was one of our more fun episodes. Thank you everyone for listening. We'll be back next week.
We'll be back with a very special guest that is not me.
That is not Chris.
Next week. All right. So that was awesome. Thank you everyone out there for listening to Delirious Nomads, sponsored by Blacklight Media. We will be coming back at you next week with another awesome guest. Be sure to follow Blacklight Media on socials for new music and more. And above all, keep it heavy.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.